You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret.
And I'm Dean Knetter. Coming up at 6 on 1A+, Buffalo, New York is mourning after a deadly racist attack. Jen White and her guests look at what steps the country can take to act against those who spread white supremacy and whether anything will change. That's at 6 on 1A+.
Now, libraries around Wisconsin are making use of federal relief grant money they received during the pandemic.
33 Wisconsin projects received funding from the American Rescue Plan.
We're going to learn about what some of the different libraries and library systems are using that money for and the community services they're providing. And then coming up, we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234, a chance for you to talk about your local library. Why you like it, how you use it. Have they offered special services over the last couple of years? How do they fit into the community? What would you like to see them do more of? Shout out to your library now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Madeline Fox reports on education for WPR. You can find her report on libraries linked at wpr.org/centraltime. Maddie, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
Well, there was a lot of money available through the American Rescue Plan. Can you give us a sense of how much of that funding found its way into Wisconsin and individual library systems here?
So specifically for libraries, we were looking at about $3 million from the American Rescue Plan Act that went to libraries, and the grant size varied from about $27,000 to about $200,000 to these individual libraries and library systems.
And you talked with library administrators and librarians around the state. We'll be joined by one here ourselves in just a minute. But can you give us an example of some of the projects you heard about that are being paid for with this federal relief money?
Yeah. So one that I thought was really interesting is the Spooner Library up in, I think, Northwest Wisconsin has been partnering with a local food bank to do what they're calling books and bread. So it's this combination of like a food box and food access for people who would ordinarily go to a food bank, as well as sort of a portable bookmobile type situation where they bring, you know, tables worth of books to these sites twice a month when they dole out food as well. And so what they were able to ask for was a bookmobile, like a big formal one where they can have all the shelves on the inside and also have food, you know, places with that they can have colder storage and store different kinds of food. And then now they're able to drive all of that around in just an easier way and make it more of a, I don't know, like a holistic experience, and hopefully be able to transport more than they can in, say, cars or vans.
Sure. So expanding into different services and kind of pushing past the boundaries of the library building itself. Was that a theme you heard beyond just that that food truck or that bookmobile?
Yes, absolutely. Well, and I think libraries in general over the last, actually, I couldn't guess how long, but quite a while, have been working on sort of pushing the boundaries of their services outside the library, whether that is book bikes, bookmobiles, whether it is doing stuff like setting up tables at, you know, community farmers markets or craft fairs, and also sometimes co-hosting events with local bookstores or other local universities and places, just to sort of remind people that they're out there. It's a free service. They have a lot of different free services, and to remind people that that they can access all of this with just a library card, and they can access a lot of things outside of the library as well.
And what did librarians tell you, Maddie, about how they've had to adapt during the pandemic and maybe some opportunities that came out of that?
Yeah. So I think we've been seeing, again, over the last several years, a shift towards making more resources virtual and expanding virtual access to things. So that's services like Hoopla that lets you read magazines and watch movies and TV shows. It's some libraries have genealogical services that you can access inside or outside the library. It is virtual lending. I know my own library, I moved to Milwaukee in spring 2020, and most of the libraries were shut down, but my library still let me sign up for a card online, and I could use that card, just my virtual card number, to check out books, or to reserve books, rather, and to check out ebooks and to watch movies, even though normally you'd have to walk into a library and show all these different kinds of proof of residence. You know, they really streamlined that process. And then you did absolutely also see libraries physically taking their Wi-Fi routers to the closest window so that even while libraries were shut down, the libraries are such a central hub for people to be able to have free access to internet if they maybe can't get it in their homes or can't afford it. And so they were trying to make it really easy for people to access that even while the library was closed.
Well, Maddie, thank you for joining us and for sharing your reporting.
Thank you for having me.
Madeline Fox reports on education for WPR. Right now, we're talking about how Wisconsin libraries are using federal relief grants they received during the pandemic. We're bringing into the conversation right now Leah Langby. Leah is Library Development and Youth Services Coordinator for the Wisconsin organization Inspiring and Facilitating Library Success, or IFLIS. Leah, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah, good to have you. And Leah, I understand that in the application process for these grants, you were talking with libraries in your system and elsewhere about the needs they had and kind of ideas they had for spending potential grant money. At that point, what kind of things did you hear?
Well, we didn't have a very large window of time. We had about 2.5 weeks to figure out what the needs were and that within the parameters of the grant and then write an application. So we were really working fast. So we went to them with several options and we wrote, I was collaborating with colleagues from a couple of other library systems serving other counties. And so we worked on, I think it was 4 different grants. Proposals, and we just got one funded. But things like outdoor, we were looking at moving some services outdoors, so outdoor seating opportunities, charging stations that were outdoors, outdoor pickup lockers so that people could pick up materials outside. Those were some of the things that didn't get funded. And then the things that did were some outdoor and indoor sort of alternative programming options. So we are purchasing 11 different book bikes for communities that range in size from Superior. So that's like to the tiniest library that we're getting one for is Boulder Junction, which has a population of under 1,000. And then some pop-up canopies for people to take their material, for libraries to take programs and or materials and services out outside, whether it's out just out in their front yard or out to the community festival or the park or the swimming pool or things like that. We also got some hybrid programming kits for libraries that are providing. A lot of libraries really dove headfirst into online programming, and they're looking for ways to make it possible to continue to offer a virtual option for folks who have transportation issues or health issues or other issues that make it hard for them to come into the library, but still have some in-person options. So, those are some of the things that we are purchasing with our grant.
And we mentioned it earlier with Maddie, but you mentioned a few things there, the book bikes and the outdoor events that seem to pick up on this theme of really getting outside and into the community and not just being, within the four walls of a library. How important is that to the library mission?
Well, I think it depends, every library has a different, has a slightly different mission, but I think, most public libraries recognize the importance of going to where people are and connecting with them. A lot of folks don't really, we're still hearing from some people that they don't realize the libraries are back open and providing services, even though they were providing services all along. And so partly it's just like getting the word out. There are people who in our system, 81% of the libraries in our system are fine free, but I think a lot of people don't know that. Mm-hmm. They think of libraries as a place, they might have associations with libraries that are less positive. And so it's really important for libraries to have a chance to get out there and share information and be there, you know, like the book bikes, people have a chance to take the library services, materials, sign up for cards, even art projects or makerspace materials out to reference services and stuff like that, out to places like, trailer parks and the swimming pool and local parks and things like that, where people might not have, been library users in the past. And it would be, it's a great opportunity to reach a broader segment of the population.
And from the librarians and the other staff you work with at libraries, is there a sense of excitement when they get to kind of like launch one of those new programs and work on something like that?
Oh, definitely. I think the trickiest part, I think most librarians have lots of excitement and passion, and maybe sometimes not as much in terms of capacity. And so having an opportunity like this to have at least some of the materials that are, made available is very exciting to them. Some of these, especially very small communities, don't really have a lot of spare change hanging around for things like, a book bike, which is a sizable expense, or even, like a pop-up canopy or a speaker microphone kind of thing that will allow for hybrid meetings. So it is pretty exciting to have an influx of that. And then along with that, we've provided some, webinar opportunities for people to learn from other folks who are doing some outreach. And so that's exciting too, to just get some ideas and try and keep it. Yeah. So I feel like I've said enough about that.
Sure. Yeah. And Leah, as we wrap up, obviously the pandemic has been a challenging and unique time, to say the least, for a lot of different sectors. I'm just curious, from your standpoint and with your library system, what has the last couple of years been like? Where do you, can you reflect a little bit on how things were in the midst of the pandemic and how you're feeling now about the future?
Oh, well, that's a big question. I think the libraries, at least the libraries that I interact with in our system, have been just steadfast in trying to find ways to continue to serve their communities. They've always been an integral part of their communities and part of the health and support to their communities. And when things were limited to more virtual interactions, that was really, really challenging for folks. It's very exciting to be able to be opening back up for in-person programming and things like that. I think people are very excited about it. It's also, it's a challenging time to be a human in general, and serving the public and seeing the needs that are out there. It's definitely challenging, I think, for folks, but they're, I can't say enough about how impressed I am by how they are rising to the challenge.
Sure. Well, Leah, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Leah Langby is Library Development and Youth Services Coordinator for Inspiring and Facilitating Library Success. She talked with us about how libraries around the state are planning to use federal relief money for projects to advance goals of providing a wide variety of community services.
Now we are opening up the phone lines for you. We want to hear from you about your local library now at 800-642-1234. What do you like about it or the people who work there? What value do you see it bringing to your community? Did you grow up going to the library? Do you go to one now with your maybe kids or grandkids? And what do you rely on the library for? The materials, books, CDs, DVDs, and more, electronic resources? Or maybe you've done job searches at a library, gone to events and programming there, or more. And if you work at a library yourself, what do you wish your community knew about your library? Call in now at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you in just a bit here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Dean Kinetter.
I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk about libraries in Wisconsin. Earlier, we heard from a WPR reporter and a Wisconsin Library Support Organization leader about how libraries around the state are using federal relief funds for new projects.
And now we want to hear from you about your local library. What makes it special? What did you check out last? Why is having a library important to your community? Give a shout out now to your local library system at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Let's go right to the call, to the phone lines. We have Sam in Madison with us. Hi, Sam.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Very good. I actually work at the Madison Central Library. I work in the makerspace. It's an art space called The Bubbler.
And what kind of things do you work on there, Sam?
We do a lot of different events, a ton of different community outreach events. I can't remember what her name was, but she was saying how, you know, we go out into the community a lot to local parks, different stuff. But I do a lot of screen printing workshops. There's a lot of mural projects. It's a makerspace in the library. It's a fantastic resource. It's open most days, normal business hours. It's great. I wish more people knew about it.
Great. Sam, thank you so much for that call at 800-642-1234. We're taking your shout-outs for your local library system, things you love about it, how you use your local library. Once again, that number is 800-642-1234. We heard from Central Time producer Rachel Vasquez here, who said she recently visited the Fitchburg Public Library and says it was just lovely. Rachel says she loves how quiet and peaceful libraries are and loves the crinkly sound of the plastic covers on library books. That's a unique take, Rachel, but thank you so much. Let's go back to our phones now. We have Wayne in the San Francisco Bay Area right now. Hi, Wayne.
Good afternoon. I wanted to recognize the Rice Lake Library for a service that they provided now some, 17 years ago. I was just newly graduated from Tulane University School of Public Health and Tropical Medicine in New Orleans in a PhD in environmental health. Shortly after that, this was 2005, I had to evacuate New Orleans ahead of Hurricane Katrina. And, of course, communications and services and so forth were drastically disrupted in all of Louisiana, or a good share of it. I needed to contact people within the State Department of Environmental Quality and also, excuse me, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I lost my voice here. at any rate, the Rice Lake Library was instrumental in me using the internet services there in order to contact government agencies, both federal and state, at a time when I didn't have internet service upon my arrival initially. Okay. So they were very kind and gave me almost unlimited access once I explained my purpose. And some other resources also that were just exceedingly helpful.
Got it. So, Wayne, thanks so much for sharing that story and for giving us a call from San Francisco today. Let's go back to the phones here. Linda is with us in Middleton. Hi, Linda.
Hi there. I'm new to Middleton, so I really haven't been to this library too much. But I was calling about the Central Library with... and also the Lakeview Library. I've rented art from there. I've done research there, and they've done research for me. They had a toy rental for a period of time at Lakeville. I've been to the book. Is it the Madison Book Fair?
I believe so.
I'm not sure if that's the right. Yeah, that was wonderful. I've been to several of those lectures, and let's see, at Lakeview there were public meetings for different neighborhood and civic things. I don't know if I've done taxes there, and certainly used the computer, especially when computers were new. Gotcha. So that's how I've used the library system.
Well, Linda, thank you so much for the call and the shout out there to the Madison Central and Lakeview library branches. Let's go next to Catherine in Iron River. Hi, Catherine.
Hello.
What did you want to shout out your local library for?
Well, Iron River Library is in the northern part of Wisconsin. We have excellent librarian, Jackie Pooler. She's as good as any computer I've ever worked on. And one thing I'm really proud of us for doing is we have recently installed a hearing loop system in our library for those patrons that have hearing disabilities, which is quite helpful for them. And we also have a genealogy corner people can do research on, two book clubs, summer reading programs, and many other programs offered throughout the year. So, and our population within our town is just a little over 1,100, but we service a great deal of the rural area around us. So it's quite a resource for the entire community.
Wonderful. Catherine, thank you so much for sharing. And thanks to everyone who called in to share their love for their local library. You can keep doing so on the Ideas Network Facebook page.
Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, the Federal Reserve is trying to fight inflation without causing a recession. The author of a new book tells us the Fed can only do so much and that we need bigger changes to the overall economy to fix things. That's coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.
Coming up after the news, Wisconsin Republicans want to overhaul the state's bipartisan elections commission. We explore how our elections are run and what it could look like without the committee. I'm Dean Kinetter.
And I'm Rob Ferret. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.
I'm Dean Kinetter.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up, the accused perpetrator of this weekend's shooting in Buffalo, New York, referenced a racist idea known as the Great Replacement Theory in his alleged online writings. An expert on extremism joins the show to talk about the conspiracy theory's origins and why versions of it have become increasingly mainstream.
First, Wisconsin's bipartisan elections commission has been the target of Republican criticism since the 2020 election.
The four GOP candidates running for governor against Tony Evers have all called for either overhauling or eliminating the commission altogether.
Here's how former Lieutenant Governor Rebecca Clayfish made her case in an interview earlier this year with WTAQ in Green Bay.
I think they have turned our elections into a circus. And so I think whether we choose to put it under the legislature or the Secretary of State's office, elections in Wisconsin must have more authority for the voters so that they have essentially one throat to choke. They need to be able to bounce someone from office, whether it's the Secretary of State or their legislator, if elections go wrong.
Democrats, including Governor Evers, have rejected calls by Republicans to disband the commission. Some Republican legislative leaders, including Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, have also rejected the idea.
We want to hear what you think at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about how elections are run in Wisconsin? Do you support the Wisconsin Elections Commission? Do you think it should be overhauled or abolished altogether? Are there ways you think it could be improved? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can email ideas@wpr.org.
Philip Chen is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Beloit College. Phil, welcome back to Central Time.
Always happy to be here.
Let's start with the creation of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. First of all, Phil, can you tell us a little bit of the history going back to 2015 of the creation of this state elections agency?
Sure. It was established in 2015 basically to replace the Government Accountability Board, which was actually established in the early 2000s. as a response to what was a legislative scandal where a number of state employees on, you know, both Democrats and Republicans were found to be campaigning with a campaigning for either their selves or their bosses to the tune of like almost $4 million in state taxpayer money. So the Government Accountability Board was established in order to provide some oversight of campaigns and the way that elections are run. And then in 2015, after years of especially Republican objections to the Government Accountability Board, which was nonpartisan, so it always had nonpartisan former judges, it was replaced in 2015 with the Wisconsin Elections Commission as well as the State Ethics Board. So it was split into two different bodies. And the Wisconsin Elections Commission now is a bipartisan election commission. So the commissioners are associated with one party or the other, but there's always an even 3-3 split.
Why has there been a strong push now from Republicans to overhaul or remove this elections commission?
Well, again, I think part of the reason is that, I mean, I think a large part of the reason is that the Wisconsin Elections Commission made a certain number of determinations in the last few elections regarding things like ballot drop boxes, voting in nursing homes and things like that, that after the election, Republicans sort of targeted as things that they did not like and did not want to see repeated in future elections. And so there's no way for Republicans in the state legislature to sort of exert power over the bipartisan Wisconsin Elections Commission. And so it's become a target. The commission has become a target because it's simply not they cannot. Republicans who might want to eliminate some of these or change the decisions that are made simply don't have that power with a bipartisan commission.
Talking to Phil Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College, looking at the Wisconsin Election Commission, calls by the Republican candidates for governor to change it a lot or get rid of it and replace it with another system. You can join in with your thoughts on that idea at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Phil, one idea that's been floated by some of the candidates is get rid of the commission, replace it with the Secretary of State, a partisan elected position in Wisconsin that currently doesn't really do much of anything. A lot of states, almost half of states, I believe, have some version of this where the Secretary of State runs things. Can you talk about that idea?
Yeah, I actually think last I checked, I think it's around 32 states. So about 60% of states, I think, vest their election administration in the Secretary of State's office. So, you know, I mean, it's neither model is unusual. I mean, what was unusual was the Government Accountability Board. A nonpartisan board was kind of an anomaly, but was actually widely praised by people who study these kinds of boards as a nice model. The bipartisan model, not that rare. So, you know, I mean, the difference, of course, is that the Secretary of State is an elected position and thus is, you know, if not accountable for their decisions, at least voters have the ability to vote that person in or out of office if they disagree with the things that they have done.
Do people see cons to that idea in states where this exists, where the Secretary of State runs an election?
You know, it's again, I think that one of the biggest sort of advantages of these boards is that they are not as subject to the whims of the voters, right? That you know, this idea that you want it's a matter of where you sort of place your priority. Do you want the decisions being made to be accountable to the voters, or do you want them being made you know, based on interpretations of existing law? And so I would say that the critiques are similar to the critiques we see as to, you know, in state Supreme Courts where you have elected versus appointed state Supreme Court justices. Do you want your your members of the court to be directly accountable to voters, or would you rather have them sort of divorced from that electoral accountability? So again, the pros and cons are kind of similar to the ones we see in the court system in thinking about whether you would like to see your elections administered with the voters having some kind of say in that process.
As we heard in that clip from former Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, now running for governor, she's also said, or the legislature running elections. I was looking at the list. I don't know that any state allows the legislative body to do that. It would be a little different than usual because that would be taking an executive function, how things work, and putting it in the hands of the legislature. Do you have thoughts on that idea, Phil?
You know, I don't know what that would look like because, as you said, it simply is not an idea that is widely used. I can't think of anywhere where the legislature is specifically in charge of running the elections. You're right. It's an executive position that where the decisions are often made by the Secretary of State or by the commission. So passing that to the legislators seems like an odd idea, an idea that is not widely used in American politics, and would seem to lend itself really, really, really problematically to the issues that were occurring in the early 2000s, late 1990s, that originally drove the state to adopt these kinds of boards.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Steve is with us in Sun Prairie. Steve, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I think the big issue that we have is most of the staffers or all the staffers are from Madison. So they're in the Madison bubble. And so all the information they provide up to the decision makers are all from a liberal, left-wing, progressive lens. And the best thing that we can do is move the board, whatever the board is, out of Madison, to make sure there's more diversity of thought within the ranks of the people that are making the recommendations.
Steve, thanks for the call. What do you think of that idea, Phil? The agency works in Madison. I don't know where the people live. The actual commissioners, half Republican appointees, half Democratic appointees. But Steve worried about the staff in a liberal bubble, he says.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I'm not all that convinced that moving it to a different place in the state would make a difference. But I don't think if that's the solution that the legislature or the governor comes up with, you know, I don't think there's any particular harm in that. I think that my guess is that the staff actually have less of a influence over the commissioners than Steve might expect. You know, I really do think that the commissioners, because they're appointed from multiple areas of the state and from both political parties, really do bring their own knowledge and expertise to the job. But, you know, if that's the decision is to move it to another part of the state, I don't think there's any particular harm in that.
Steve, thanks for that call. We're talking about the future of Wisconsin's elections and who's in charge of them. Phil Chen is with us, political science professor at Beloit College. And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What questions do you have about the Wisconsin Elections Commission? Do you want to see it continue operating the way it has been? Do you think it's working well? Are there decisions it made that you agreed with or didn't agree with in that pandemic year election of 2020? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Verrett.
And I'm Dean Knetter. Right now, we're picking up the conversation with political science professor Phil Chen from Beloit College. He's with us today looking at how Wisconsin elections are run and what could happen if the State Elections Commission is abolished, as some Republican candidates for governor have proposed.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think? Let it ride as it is? Or if the Elections Commission went away, who would you want running our elections in the state? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's go back to your calls now. Linda is with us in Eau Claire. Linda, hi.
Hello. Yeah, I think the election commission is fine just the way it is. This state is so gerrymandered. There's no way in heck that it should be given to a legislature to make decisions on it. It's just fine. And anybody who thinks it should be changed, I think it's for political reasons. It's just fine the way it is. People have input into it. Vote. That's our input. Input into it. Thank you.
Linda, thanks for the call. Phil, what do you think of what Linda had to say?
I mean, I think she's absolutely right that moving election administration to the state legislature is dangerous, given the level of documentable empirical gerrymandering that has occurred in the state legislature. But again, I don't, I'm not even sure that's a viable possibility given sort of the anomalous status of something like that would be. But even moving it to the Secretary of State's office does raise real concerns about the sort of politicized nature. As Linda said, people do have say in who gets appointed to the Elections Commission because they're appointed by elected officials. And so the danger of moving it to the Secretary of State's office is that we are seeing, historically, these have been sort of the campaigns for secretaries of state have been focused on sort of electoral experience. What, have you served on maybe the Elections Committee in the state legislature or something like that? Now we're starting to see that even those positions are becoming very, very polarized and politicized. We see this in Georgia with primary challenges to the sitting Republican Secretary of State. And so to the extent the Secretary of State races become more like partisan races, it raises some real concerns about whether the decisions that were made by that office would be either political in nature or truly about sort of correct interpretations of the law.
Thanks for that call at 800-642-1234. Phil, before we go back to our callers, another candidate, Republican Tim Michaels, running for office, has floated the idea of keeping this Elections Commission, but dismissing the entire board, firing all the top-level employees, cancel existing guidance to local clerks, and then start over with a new board. So sweep the board clean and sort of rebuild it from the ground up. What do you see the potential impact of that being?
I think it might make a difference, but you're still drawing, you're going to be drawing people who are appointed because of some kind of desire from the individuals appointing them. So yeah, maybe you would, given that it would be appointed by, the governor and the minority leader or majority leader in the state legislative bodies. Yeah, you might, what you might end up with is a more partisan but a still divided board because of the sort of the context of when they're being appointed. Some of the other things proposed are actually sort of odd. The proposal to sort of twice yearly purge voters, that's actually less frequent than the board currently does that. So there are some things that suggest that may not be the most the reform may not be totally in line with what is even happening at the Wisconsin Elections Commission. But again, you're still drawing people, and as far as those who have the expertise to apply for those jobs, there's still only a limited number of people who have that expertise. And so it might not hurt, but it might not help the sort of the end goal that that they're hoping to get out of this.
Talking to Phil Chen from Beloit College about Wisconsin's election commission, calls from Republican candidates for governor in particular to abolish or change it. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Back to your calls. Lisa is with us in Madison. Lisa, hi.
Hi. I've been reading a lot about, we have 19 GOP-run states right now that have installed either partisan boards or work to put, as your guest was alluding to, the power to determine elections into the Secretary of State's hands. And that gives them the ability to overturn elections that they deem fraudulent, which means if we were back in 2020, Many of these boards would have deemed the 2020 election fraudulent, likely, and overturned that election. And so going forward, we're creating a scenario where what was attempted to be done in 2020 through illegal means is now going to be done through, you know, quote unquote, legal means. And it's essentially taking the power out of the citizens' hands and handing it over to partisan officials who are going to decide who won an election.
Lisa, thanks for that call. Phil, do you share that concern that some changes might make it possible to, in effect, overturn the popular vote, overturn the will of the voters?
I mean, I do share that concern because of the narrative and the language that has been used by a number of Republican election officials in the wake of the 2020 election. You know, I think that and more importantly, the way that though that narrative conflicts with the documentable, verifiable, empirical evidence of the sheer lack of fraud. And so I really do worry that even if they are, this is the goal and it is ultimately unsuccessful, it deeply undermines the public's trust in elections. And so I think that my concern is not just with whether this is actually the goal. You know, it may be, it may not, but my concern is that it's deeply harmful to the trust that people place in the elections and the fairness of the elections.
Thanks for that call. One of the candidates we haven't mentioned yet, Timothy Ramthan, is a state lawmaker who's tried to introduce legislation to overturn, to withdraw, in effect, Wisconsin's electors from 2020, and is still campaigning to do that. If that is the motivation here, do you worry that these changes, in particular in Wisconsin, might make it easier to do that, even if 2020 is a done deal?
You know, it's difficult to say, right? Because a lot of it will depend on how the legislation is written, how the power is vested. But if you have a candidate for governor who has an expressed desire to overturn the outcome of an election and replace presidential electors with a different slate, it raises real concerns. It's hard to know what would actually happen in that scenario. I don't want to speculate, but I would say it raises concerns that is a serious possibility. If a governor were in place who wanted to do this and had a friendly Secretary of State, this is why these nonpartisan or bipartisan boards are often drawn up the way they are, is to protect against, you know, a single individual's sort of using their power in such a way.
Time for one more caller. Nancy is with us in Wausau. Nancy, hi.
Yes, I firmly believe when it was the Government Accountability Board was probably the best we saw for a nonpartisan way to look at it. Under the Walker regime, it became the Elections Commission. And now if we're going to turn it over or think about turning it over to the Wisconsin State Legislature, when you live in a state that is as highly gerrymandered as Wisconsin is, we have a Republican legislature. How are you going to keep this nonpartisan?
Nancy, thanks for the call. Phil?
I mean, I think the short answer is there's no intention to keep the election administration nonpartisan. And in many states, secretaries of state are elected as partisan individuals. In fact, most states, that's the case. And so this is where that conflict comes in. I think a lot of people seem to like the Government Accountability Board because it was explicitly nonpartisan. And the Wisconsin Election Commission was kind of this middle ground of saying, okay, well, we'll make it bipartisan, but it'll still be a commission. And to the extent that people want their elections administered in a nonpartisan or a bipartisan manner, moving to a Secretary of State, especially a partisan Secretary of State election like we have in Wisconsin, really removes any of that pretense of impartiality.
Thanks for that call. And Phil, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
That's Philip Chen, assistant professor of political science at Beloit College, with us today looking at the role of the Wisconsin Elections Commission and possible alternatives proposed by Republican candidates for governor.
Coming up after the news, we'll talk about the threat posed by domestic extremism as a shooting in Buffalo, New York is being investigated as a racially motivated hate crime. I'm Dean Kinetter.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.